Blade Runner 2049 is currently my favorite movie of all time. But the interesting thing is, if it weren't for Blade Runner's final 30 minutes, it would just be another movie for me. An extremely cool movie, don't get me wrong, but ultimately just another movie. As a refresher, with 30 minutes left, Kay has been rescued mysteriously by Mariette, and we learn that she is part of a band of replicants determined to overthrow their human oppressors. To this point, we have been led to believe that Kay is the chosen one, the first real boy of replicants, born of a replicant father and mother who can usher in a new world. But here he is floored to discover that in reality, the chosen one is not masculine, but feminine, and hence, not him. When I sat in the theater watching Blade Runner 2049 for the first time, I remember thinking that this is where the movie was going to get political and predictable, running some version of the women are the future motif that we've had pushed at us so much lately.
Bad dog.
But I'm glad that that was not the whole story. The next scene involves Deckard, who was set up in the movie as both a symbolic and literal father figure. But to this point, it'd been a mixed bag whether he represented the spirit of the great father or something more akin to the deadbeat dad. His story was that he'd been out of the picture of his child's life in order to protect his child.
Sometimes to love someone, you gotta be a stranger.
Which bodes well for him. But on the other hand, the fact that he's been holed up in a Vegas nuclear wasteland, surrounded by decaying sexual figures and an endless supply of whiskey, does not reflect well. But now captured and placed against the figure of Wallace, who in his godlike pretensions and desire to dominate the universe clearly represents so much that can go wrong with masculinity, Deckard has a chance to show what he's really made of. Wallace tries to offer Deckard the most enticing thing he can conceive of, a new version of the mother and wife figure Rachel, in order for Deckard to give up his child. But in the end, it's hardly even a conflict for Deckard, as he embodies the spirit of the Great Father wholeheartedly and sticks it to Wallace.
You don't have children, do you?
Vision is a symbolic theme running through Blade Runner 2049, and it's worth noting that neither Wallace nor the female rebel leader Freysa are seeing things clearly here. The person who views the world in terms of oppressors and oppressed, and who is looking to simply flip the balance of power, who looks to the feminine spirit as the principal solution to the future, this person does not see the whole picture. The person who sees the world solely in terms of a hierarchy of dominance through technology, with living things functioning only as objects and tools in service to his domination, this person does not see clearly. Who does see things clearly then? We could say Deckard is seeing things clearly, but Deckard is still Wallace's captive and in need of rescue. He's in no position to act on his vision. So back to Kay. The opening image of the movie is that of Kay's eye opening, suggesting that he will be the one with the clearest vision. For most of the movie, Kay has been admirably searching for a higher and more meaningful reality than the one that's been presented to him as an artificial humanoid and as a hunter-killer in service to human masters. We've seen him attracted to anything naturally real, anything authentic, and that search led him to believe that he was the answer. He was the most real thing. The universe had centered around him. And crucial to convincing him that the world was centering around him was Joy, his artificial girlfriend, made to tell him the things he longed to hear most.
I always told you, you're special. A real boy now.
And it's hard to blame Kay for being taken in by it all. Joy is extremely compelling. Our first impression of the relationship is silly, but as the movie progresses and we see the depth of their emotion and attachment, we come to root for this couple. and that maybe there's some way for Kay and Joy to have an authentic relationship. That in this relationship, Kay will find his higher reality. Then there's the story with Kay as the chosen special one, which is also extremely compelling. We've seen these kind of movies before, with the protagonist discovering that they're the chosen one, and these are good stories. But we have to ask ourselves, to what kind of person are either of these two stories most compelling? Joy puts it best.
Real boy now.
With boy being the operative word here. These are boyish and adolescent fantasies that center the world around the boy, not realizations belonging to mature manhood. And it's through this lens of boyish fantasy that Kay's been seeing the world. And now he's been made to face up to that fact. First, in the revelation that he was not the chosen special one. And then, in this climactic scene where Kay has to face up with naked intensity to what Joy really was. Namely, somebody who says everything you want to hear, and who is everything you want to see, which therefore is someone who can never offer an authentic relationship. So at this crucial point of the movie, Kay is left with essentially an up or out situation. And he chooses up. He chooses to grow up. He chooses to man up, to accept that he's not special, just like everybody else. But what he can do is stand for something special. He can fight for something that does embody the reality and authenticity he's been seeking. He was not the chosen one, but you don't have to be the chosen one to act heroically. And what follows next is exactly what heroes have always done. Kay leaves the walled, ordered confines of society and goes to the dark waters of chaos those walls hold back. His mission? Not to kill the Great Father, as the revolutionaries wanted him to, but to rescue the Great Father, the benevolent masculine spirit which underlies all functioning societies, but is constantly falling out of date and is guarded by the Dragon of Chaos. And let's take a minute to talk about this Dragon of Chaos, love. I can't think of love without thinking of one side of the spirit of the modern woman. Eminently capable and accomplished, strong, authoritative, and fierce. You can't help but respect love. But there's also something being suppressed here. We see that earlier at a moment of birth. And we saw that at a moment when she was made to bring about cruel death. Which serves to remind us that in the end, this kind of woman is in reality subservient to that twisted masculine spirit of dominance. This is the great irony of the modern woman, that while she's at once disgusted with the masculine dominance of the past, she also seems to have adopted the same pursuit of dominance, the same value system and worldview that ultimately is subservient to the very warped brand of masculinity she's complained against for so long. In any case, she's a fearsome, terrifying opponent. I mean, let's be honest, in many ways she can kick men's butts, which is exactly what she does to Kay. Kay is finished here, defeated, but then she pulls this.
I'm the best one.
And that's where she loses, right there. When it comes to sex and gender, I don't think Blade Runner 2049 is about the future. I think it's very much about the present. And in this scene, I think there's a warning to us all. There's much to admire about the way women are defining themselves in the modern era, and I'm interested to see where things end up in the long run. But if they choose to turn this into a competition with men, things will go badly for everyone. Not a very compelling future, in my opinion. So Kay slays the Dragon of Chaos, and rescues the Great Father, and restores him. Darkness begins to lift from the world. And now Kay's intentions become clear. Kay has brought Deckard to the laboratory of Dr. Anna Stelling, who is the authentic special child, born of Rachel and Deckard, and who Deckard has never met. The revolutionary leader in her half-distorted vision had thought that the child was destined to be a revolutionary leader, But Stelling does not fit the bill. What kind of woman is she then? Educated, capable, competent, and thoroughly feminine. Sought out for her creative skill, but insisting on only working through independent exchange, not under a master. And what is her work? She makes memories. The memories she makes are the positive foundation which form the basis of character for countless individuals in order to help them face the inevitable difficulties of life.
All the best memories are hers.
This movie is centered around Kay's search for what could bring an alignment to the disjunctions and dualities of an exhausted world, and bring about a rebirth of life and possibility to the world. This entire time we were made to think that this alignment would all come about in the special child, and then we were led to believe it would be more specifically in the feminine child. But Kay didn't need to rescue Deckard for that ending. In the end, much more has been brought into alignment, which bears just as many lessons for our own world as it does for the Blade Runner universe. The aligned future presented here isn't solely masculine or feminine. It is masculine and feminine, properly aligned in their complementary positive forms. This future centers not around an individual, and not around a societal collective, but around the family unit. And this future rescues the dignity of a kind of masculinity that has been much maligned in our own world, but with which many a male continues to identify with nonetheless. And it shows the value of this masculinity when it's made to live and die for the highest ideals. You can debate whether Kay was truly human, but there is no debating whether or not he is a man.